What can you tell us about the restoration of it, and when did that happen?
Well, I didn't get the airplane right from the recovery. A friend of mine, Bill Floden, actually recovered the airplane, but it had sunk in the 50s in a inland lake in Hawaii. And it sat there for 30 years, and nobody was interested, and everybody knew it was there, and it was just, you know, it didn't have any value or appeal or anything. And Bill went in there, and he dove down on the airplane, and they put flotation devices under the wings and so forth, and they lifted it up and brought it to the shore and hauled it ashore and cleaned it up and started the restoration. He didn't get very far, but he got started, and he realized what a big job it was. But kind of one very interesting part of this restoration is the upper fuselage area was not too badly destroyed by this crash in the inland lake, but the float was actually broken in half and just totally destroyed. And anyway, we were flying our Aerostar, our private airplane, down to a little airport, I think it was in Tennessee, and I'm walking along, just kind of wasting time, waiting for some gas, and I see this boat-looking thing on the side of the hangar there, and some guys had obtained this float from the fuselage down, and were using it for a fishing boat. They put a trailer hitch on the tail end of it, and when they'd want to tow it, they would just wind the wheels down and tow it to the lake. When they got to the lake, they'd bring the wheels up and back it in the lake and bring the wheels up and use the thing as a, it had an outboard motor they put through a hole in the bottom and drove it around the lake and came back. So anyway, we found this thing sitting there, and sure enough, that was the float, and that's this float that you see here. We did very little work to it to restore it. It was actually in terrific shape.
Were those guys, do you think they'd ever heard of a thing called a bass boat?
I don't know, but I gave them very little money for it at the time, and they were happy, and they just thought they had...
You know, the whole restoration process, how much of this airplane was the original airplane? How much of it had to be either rebuilt, engineered, created?
Very little of it is actually original. Here and there, there's a little stringer or a cross member or a strut that was original. Yeah, but the side metal has all been replaced. It was corroded. And of course, all of the instruments and everything, the panel was just completely destroyed. 30 years in the water. It was fresh water, so it wasn't corroded, but it was.
What about the wings and struts?
I think very little of that is original. Here and there, there's a spar or a connection that's original, but we built a ton of stuff for this airplane. Wow. Just fixture after fixture and part after part to make this thing an airplane.
Where is it? Where do you keep it now?
We keep it in Kenosha. We have a hangar there with several of my warbirds. And as you know, I'm a collector of water airplanes. I love flying airplanes on the water. I have a goose, and we had the albatross, and just a bunch of seaplanes all my life, lake amphibians. So when I saw the opportunity, I also love Grumman airplanes. When I got the opportunity to get a duck, I just latched right onto it. I couldn't pass it up.
And how many years have you had it now? Ballpark?
15 years, 15. Something in that area, yes.
How does it fly?
It actually flies very well. It has terrible visibility on the ground, so I think the hardest part of the airplane is taxiing it. And of course, there's no steering, no connection to the tail wheel whatsoever, So all you can do is differential braking to turn the airplane. And you do get used to it. And between the power management and the braking, you can get the airplane into small, tight spaces. And it seems to work out. But it's certainly not something that you could just get into and do, put it that way.
Right, right. Yeah. Back to the Cadet, Greg. What's this plane like to fly?
For me, I come from, I was military trained, flew F-15Es, A-10s, and B-52s. So I'm kind of a big airplane guy. I come back to flying this airplane, and the actual flight characteristics are just exquisite. I absolutely love it. I'm still a little intimidated by only having 65 horsepower, but I'm learning.
But you had to fly it across the mountains, right?
Allison and I brought it cross country all the way from the Seattle area, Burlington, Washington, to here. And it's a wonderful little machine. And I learned on the trip over here that if you just leave the throttle full open, keep the airspeed indicator on 60 miles per hour, she will climb and just keep climbing. And we got her to get over Yellowstone and that area. We were planning to go to Bozeman, but when she reached 12,000 feet, I figured I was safe enough to cut the corner. So I cut the corner and we went over into Billings, basically.
Right.
So it's an amazing, you know, get this, I had four flight, I had to take a picture of it on my phone. 12,000 feet, 102 knots ground speed with this little airplane.
Wow. The how much of that this airplane, yours, is original and how much is recreated?
So I bought this airplane after the restoration from Kent Peach. Kent, of course, flies the Interstate Cadet for his air show act, the Jelly Belly Interstate Cadet. So Kent was buying a pile of parts of Interstate Cadets to help him rebuild some as well as have parts for his airplane. And what it is was the airframe itself is airframe serial number 109. But everything else had been separated. This airplane, it's a little bit longer story. It had gone in through an estate process. And I think that's where the story got separated from the airframe itself. And it ended up in a scrap heap. And that airframe was actually pretty close to getting into a smelter. So we would have completely lost this history and it would have gone away. But Kent found it. He confirmed that with Tim Tallon. Tim Tallon did the restoration. And when Tim did the restoration on this very special airplane, he tried to do it to the T. So, I mean, the bolts have the proper stamp on the top of them for the era of 1941. That tail wheel on the back is the 1941 tail wheel. It is a pain in the neck, but it's neat to have that original tail wheel.
Why is it a pain in the neck?
It doesn't fully caster. You know, it doesn't have that breakaway like a steerman does or something like that, so you can do that tail wheel pivot. So it has a very limited steering. So I'm kind of listening to Chuck talk about using the duck on this. This thing, everybody expects a tail wheel to be able to turn 90 on the ground. This thing can't. So you're the very limited turns. And it's easy to brake if you try to push it backwards. You know, so it's all of these inconveniences that we learned afterwards, you know, after doing it for a while, came up with better ideas. But this airplane has a lot of little areas where they're just not convenient, but it is extremely authentic. Little fuse brakes on there are very different. You can get on the side, you can see the fuses on the side. All of that very original to the 1941, June of 1941 construction of this aircraft.
Now, I understand that Cornelia Fort lost her logbooks in a fire.
That's my hypothesis. Yeah, there is one of the issues with the history of this aircraft is that Cornelia Fort's logbook has a different registration number in it. So when I bought the airplane from Kent, the history was very disputed. And so I agreed with Kent. I said, look, I'm looking for a small airplane that I can work with Allison on for training and that kind of stuff. And so it was in a position where he was just had to kind of sell it. So at the bar at ICAST, the International Council of Air Shows convention we do every year, at the bar, I agreed to buy the airplane. It was an expensive beer, but it was worthwhile.
Yeah.
So I did the research. You know, I've got other things going on. So it took me a long time to really get the research accomplished. But what I ended up finding was 37345 has no records of ever being in Hawaii. In fact, it was based in Tucson, Arizona. So we start looking back at the history of 37345. I got the FAA records, and 37345 was born, came off the factory floor October 17th in 1941. So I went deeper into Cornelia's logbook, and this took a while. This is a really short story for what took over a year and a half to kind of, you know, the epiphany to occur. and looked at her logbook, and she flew this plane on September 21st, 1941, several weeks before it even came off the factory floor, according to her logbook. So that can tell you that then there's a flaw in the logbook. That's where the theory of her logbook, she kept her diary, she very prolific diary writer, and she kept her diaries at her family home while she was with the waves because she knew she'd be moving around a lot and wanted to keep them safe. Well, unfortunately, her safe haven for her diaries also caught on fire and burned down. So I believe her logbooks burned up as well, and like an enterprising pilot, you know, if you want to get a job with the airlines, you can't walk into the airline interview and go, hey, I've got all these hours, but my logbook burned up. So, especially as a female in that time frame. So I think she was smart. She identified in letters home that her diary had burned up, but she did not never identify the logbook burned up. But there's this logbook that has this entry in it is logbook number 3. Nobody knows where logbook 1 and 2 are. So that kind of kept me leading down this towards this hypothesis that her logbooks were with her diaries. And so she was recreating her logbook. She was a very, she kept a lot of her notes. She kept most of her orders that the Army Air Corps gave her for deliveries. And so she could actually pretty reliably rebuild her logbook. But what she didn't have was the registration number of the interstate cadet she was flying when, during that major moment. And everybody asked her that. And so she stumbled across 37345, where it was based in Tucson, because she was doing BT-13 deliveries from Long Beach to Love Field, and she would stop in Tucson overnight to visit a friend, as well as a good place to stop. So I think that's where she picked up the 37345 number, so that, you know, she knew the airlines could look at it and go, Interstate Cadet, 37345 FAA records, Interstate, 37345, yep, that's an Interstate Cadet. They wouldn't go beyond that, but that's how they would validate her logbook.